Psalm 122, verse 6, tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. With all the conflict in the Middle East and the fate of Jerusalem hanging in the balance, that admonition is more important now than ever before. Stay with us as Gary Hedrick explains why we should pray for Jerusalem and the Jews, right here on Messianic Perspectives. This is Messianic Perspectives, the daily Bible teaching program sponsored by CJF Ministries in San Antonio, Texas. You can visit us online at cjfm.org. I'm Liz Aiello. Today, Dr. Gary Hedrick is leading our discussion on why we should pray for Jerusalem and the Jews. I'll be back at the close of the program to tell you about this week's special offer. And now, with today's installment, here is Gary Hedrick.
Thank you, and welcome, listening friend. It's good to have you with us as we continue this series of studies on why we should pray for Jerusalem and the Jews. And we're in the process of looking at seven basic biblical reasons why Christians should pray for Jerusalem and the Jewish people. We said the first reason was because of the promise of God's blessing. Psalm 122, verse 6 says, "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee." Then we said reason number two was because of our indebtedness to the Jewish people. That is, we should pray for Jerusalem and the Jewish people because of our indebtedness to them. They've given us our spiritual heritage as Christians because without the Jewish people, we wouldn't have the Bible and we wouldn't have the Messiah. Now let's talk a little bit about this messianic issue because this is really the main line of demarcation between traditional Judaism and Christianity. The messianic issue, the identity of the Messiah, and whether or not Yeshua of Nazareth had the qualifications to be Messiah. Of course, the rabbis are very emphatic in their view that Jesus of Nazareth was not the Messiah. Sometimes Christians say, "How can the Jewish people be so blind? Why can't they see that Jesus fulfilled all of those prophecies and that he's the Messiah? Why don't they see it?" Well, the main reason they say he wasn't the Messiah is that according to Jewish tradition, he doesn't meet the requirements. So what are those requirements according to Jewish tradition? Well, here's a note that came by electronic mail a little while ago. It's from a Jewish man in New York, and he and I have been going back and forth for many months over a lot of issues. He's a leading Jewish scholar. He's an expert in Hebrew, Greek, Latin, Arabic, and many other several other languages. But I'm not going to mention his name because I didn't ask for permission to use his name. But I asked him to summarize for us the requirements for Messiah according to Jewish tradition. And he very kindly responded with this note. So here are the messianic qualifications according to Jewish tradition. There are 9 points, and here's what he says. Quote, "According to the Bible, there are some things that the Messiah will accomplish in his lifetime. In ushering in the messianic age, he will, number one, rebuild the temple physically and institute the sacrifices. Ezekiel provides the dimensions of the temple, and many prophets mention the return of the sacrifices to the temple. Number two, he will regather the Jews to Israel as mentioned in Torah and Nevi'im, the prophets. The laws of the land, giving first fruits, leaving for the poor, truma, masar, and so on, will be reinstituted. A court of Jewish law will be installed. Number three, he says the Messiah will descend from King David as Isaiah, Micah, and many other prophets mention. Number four, the Messiah will institute a world peace that will prevail forever, Isaiah 2. The nations that were once hostile to Israel will be docile and peaceable. Number five, in the messianic times, the curses of Adam and Eve will be reversed. There will be no death. The ground will yield growth immediately and easily. Women will give birth quickly and painlessly, even to sextuplets. Number six, according to the prophets, the dead will return to life. This is a basic tenet of Jewish belief. In fact, the Rambam, Maimonides, lists it as one of the essential beliefs of Judaism. Number seven, at the time of the Messiah, when the Jews return to Israel and reestablish a country based on biblical law, 9 cities of refuge will be established as a matter of law as cities for Levites. Their other function, he says, to provide a safe haven for refugees who commit accidental murder, will no longer be necessary in the Messianic age. Number 8, the Messiah will reinstitute the law as a governmental scope. I'm not exactly sure what he means by that. Based fully on Torah, written and oral, as the law of the land. And then number 9, at that time, everyone will acknowledge the one God of Israel, and godliness will be revealed in all things, Zechariah 14 and the book of Nehemiah. So those are the 9 requirements for the Messiah, according to the Orthodox rabbis. And if you ask them, why don't you believe Jesus was the Messiah? They'll take you to these 9 requirements and they'll say, all right, let's take them one at a time. First of all, did Jesus of Nazareth build the third temple while he was here? Of course not. The second temple was still standing at the time. So he failed on that point. Number 2, did he regather all of the world's Jews to Eretz Israel and restore Israel's national sovereignty? No, he didn't. Number 3, was he descended from the line of David? Yes, he was. So that's 1 out of 3 so far. Number 4, did Jesus of Nazareth institute the Messianic age of peace and prosperity while he was here? No, he didn't. Number 5, did he reverse the curse of Adam and Eve and abolish death and disease while he was here? No, he didn't. You get the point. Jesus of Nazareth qualified on 1 point out of 5 so far. And they go all the way down the list. Out of 9 points, he has 1 of the qualifications according to Jewish tradition. 1 out of 9. That's not a very good percentage. You've got to see it from their perspective, my friend. Of course they're wrong, but you'll never be effective in witnessing to your Jewish friends and neighbors until you know something about how they think and about what they've been taught. Now let me show you where many of the Orthodox rabbis have missed the boat. And I've mentioned this in previous correspondence with this Jewish gentleman who sent me this note, and he's probably listening right now, but he's never replied to this particular point. So Jacob, if you have an answer to this, now would be a good time to send it to me. The only answer I've ever seen to what I'm about to give you is that it's not according to Jewish tradition. They'll say, that's very interesting, but it's not according to Talmud, or it's not according to the Rambam, or it's not according to rabbinical interpretation. But the point is not, what does the Talmud say, or what does Moses Maimonides say, or what do the rabbis say? The real point is, what does the Bible say? The traditions might be wrong. The rabbis could be wrong. The Rambam may have been wrong. But the Bible is never wrong. And here's where traditional Judaism is wrong about Jesus of Nazareth. It's very simple. There are 2 sets of prophecies in the Bible regarding the Messiah. The prophecies aren't all lumped together in one conglomeration. They're very carefully laid out along 2 separate tracks. On the first track, you've got the prophecies that portray Messiah as the suffering servant who would give himself as an offering for the sins of his people. That's Isaiah 53 and Psalm 22 and other prophecies of the suffering Messiah. Then there's a second track of prophecy that portrays the coming of the Messiah as a conquering king. And that's when he builds the third temple and establishes the Messianic age and ushers in world peace and all the rest of those 9 points that Jacob sent in his note. In fact, there were ancient rabbis who recognized those 2 separate tracks of prophecy, and so they came up with the idea that there would be 2 different messiahs rather than just one. They called the suffering Messiah Moshiach ben Yosef, and the kingly Messiah they called Moshiach ben David, Messiah son of Joseph and Messiah son of David, one to die and the other to reign, 2 messiahs. What never occurred to them was the possibility that those 2 sets of prophecies could not only be resolved by 2 messiahs who each came once, but they could also be resolved by 1 messiah who came twice. Are you still with me? Not 2 messiahs who each came once, but 1 messiah who comes twice. And when Jesus came the first time, my friend, he fulfilled the suffering servant prophecies. When he comes the second time, he will be in the role of King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Moshiach ben David. Sometimes Jewish people will say, well, why didn't your Yeshua fulfill the important prophecies? And by that, they mean the Moshiach ben David prophecies, the glamorous prophecies that have to do with international peace and prosperity and the building of the temple and all those spectacular things. You see, they think the suffering servant prophecies are just minor, dull, unimportant. But let me tell you something, my Jewish friend. If Yeshua hadn't dealt with the sin problem, which is at the heart of all the problems of humanity and has been at the heart of all of our problems since the very beginning of time, if he hadn't dealt with the sin problem as Moshiach ben Yosef, then nothing else would have mattered. It would have been pointless to set up the kingdom without dealing with the sin problem, because then the whole cycle would just start all over again. We'd have another Garden of Eden, and the whole vicious cycle would just repeat itself. But if you want to see Yeshua fulfill the rest of the prophecies, my friend, the important prophecies, just wait. He will. Well, we've got more to say about this, but that's all of our time for today. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gary. And thank you, listening friend, for tuning in today. The time flies by so quickly, but it's always good to have you with us as we take these few minutes to look into God's Word together. You've been listening to Gary Hedrick here on Messianic Perspectives. Before we leave the air today, we want to let you know about our special offer for this week. Here in America, we declared war on terrorism on September 11, 2001. But in Israel, they've been fighting this war for decades. Even now, the lines are being drawn in the sand for the Battle of Jerusalem. In his speech to Arab audiences, Yasser Arafat made the point emphatically that he wanted nothing less than complete sovereignty over the old city of Jerusalem. And the Vatican is talking about making Jerusalem an international city under multinational jurisdiction. So more than ever before, those of us who know the Lord and who love Israel and the Jewish people need to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. That's why we've placed all of these programs on one convenient CD. You can listen to it over and over again as a prayer reminder. The title is simply, Why We Should Pray for Jerusalem and the Jews. And it's yours for a gift of just $6 or more to Messianic Perspectives. Just ask for series number GT13 entitled, Why We Should Pray for Jerusalem and the Jews. Just visit our secure online store at messianicspecialties.com to place your order. If you would prefer to order by mail, just address your request to Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. To order by phone, use our toll-free order line from the U.S. The number is 1-800-926-5397. Have you enjoyed this edition of Messianic Perspectives? Why not continue to learn about the Jewish roots of your Christian faith by inviting a speaker from CJF Ministries? Call our toll-free number 1-800-926-5397, and we'll be happy to handle all of the details. And as always, when you're in touch with us, please mention the call letters of this station. If you're listening to our webcast or podcast, we need to know that too. I'm Liz Aiello. Join us next time, won't you, as Gary Hedrick continues our series on Why We Should Pray for Jerusalem and the Jews, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries of San Antonio, Texas, and is made possible on this station by the free will contributions of our listeners in this area.